Ever wonder if there's more to the movies you love? Do you like to ponder how they got from A to Z? Who chose the plot twists? Why use those characters? Is there a deeper meaning? We're here to explore those questions and maybe learn a bit along the way. VGB Studios proudly presents The Filmlossophers.
Hello and welcome to another exciting episode of The Filmlossophers, the show that gets into the movies you love and digs a little deeper. I am your host, Eddie Villanueva, and alongside me, as always, is the fan of the Star Trek universe that is probably one of the biggest fans in all the world and is co-host of the show, Mr. Spencer Williams.
Hey, I'm here this week.
He is here this week, yep. And we promised to talk about it. Also with us is also intern slash ensign Amy.
Yay, I have ensign. Wait, wasn't I supposed to be a commander or a lieutenant commander?
Let me take that back. Lieutenant intern commander. Red shirt Amy.
That's so rude.
We got a great show in store as we are going to make our second attempt about talking about the recently dropped made-for-TV movie from the Star Trek universe, and that is Star Trek Section 31. So, stick around as we dive into that, get into all the nitty-gritty details and all the parts that you know you want to hear us talk about. But before we do, Spencer, why don't you give us some opening credits?
Tune into brand new episodes each and every week.
Week!
Week?
On all your favorite streaming platforms.
That's
sign up face.
I was like,
philosophersPodcast.com.
A dyslexic pig, like, week? Week.
Week? Okay.
Also, this is a pick on the intern episode.
You set us up. We didn't even do anything.
Funny, though. Sorry.
It's okay, Spencer. I'm used to you laughing.
Also, connect with us on the social pages at facebook.com/philosophers, on Twitter and Instagram at philosophy101. We also have a Threads and a Blue Sky.
That we do. That's right. We got a website. Everything from, we got over allegedly 300 episodes, everything from action, anime, comedy, suspense, thrills, and chills. If you're looking for it, we got it. Head on over to our website at filmlosopherspodcast.com. And let us know what you think. Also, we are on wherever podcasts are streaming. And I had to burp. iTunes, Libsyn, Player FM, Audio Boom, Spotify, Pandora, TuneIn, iHeart, Amazon Music. We are on all those places. Tune into your heart's desire on any one of those platforms. Look for us there at The Filmlossophers and give us a follow and a subscribe. And if you like what you hear, give us a 5-star review. We've earned it.
We have.
Yes, please.
That's right. Please. We will give you the social links at the end of the episode. This has been an interesting attempt to record this episode.
I don't even understand what happened.
It was not my fault.
It was the intern's fault, to be honest. What? The intern decided to talk about a subject that was absolutely volatile, and it exploded, and it turned into what is last week's episode. If you don't know what we're talking about, listen to last week's extra credit episode, The Disease, the Intern Files of
the disease?
Brain Melt Disease. Brain Melt Disease. Isn't that you're the one who came up with the title.
That was a good title, by the way.
But I
Excuse
didn't say
me.
The intern disease. That was rude.
I did not say the intern disease. I said yes. The disease, and I didn't get a chance to finish. Uh-huh. She does listen. We know. Last week we talked about a unique platform that is available via mobile called Real Shorts or Real Short. I'm not sure which one it is. Because they got me instantly hooked through an ad, mind you, not even a real video. It was an ad video. And ultimately last week's episode turned into this full blown, knockout having to watch. We literally stopped the episode midway through and ended up watching the movie and then, came back after the fact and talked about it. So if you want to check out the madness of that episode, check out last week's extra credit episode, The Intern Files of Brain Melt Disease, and, no doubt you'll have a great laugh. But I do want to mention before we dive into this week's episode, because we're going to talk about Star Trek. We're going to do it, Spencer.
Okay.
We're going to do it.
Promise.
No. Look at me. We're going to do it.
We're back in look at me territory.
We're back.
Happened again.
I do have to mention.
Oh, Lord.
I woke up yesterday, obviously.
Oh, no. You got sucked into something else, didn't you?
And I grabbed my phone and I was scrolling through Facebook. Facebook videos.
Through Facebook?
That's where it was at.
Oh, I caught you on Facebook. Oh.
That's where it always ends up happening. I go to Facebook for like engineering videos and like weird survival videos that apparently pop up for some reason.
Okay, so I think I need to talk to you about investing into some type of ad blocker.
Mm-hmm.
Because like...
On my phone?
Yeah.
We'll see. But either way, I was on there and I was looking up stuff, and then this video came up, and it was I recognized the top red bar where it has the Real Shorts name, and I'm like, oh no, I'm not doing this again. No way. And then the title of it, I was like, I was going to switch away until I read the title. And the
my
title,
baby killed my husband.
It was called You Fired a Tech Genius.
Oh, yeah. I remember seeing that on the list.
And I was like, I could be a tech genius.
No.
I mean, Spencer's a tech genius.
I am not.
Amy's
not a tech genius.
Spencer's a tech genius. So I was like, all right.
Wait, did you watch the entire thing?
All right. So I started watching it, and
it's
like,
his Sunday now, thing now.
Now, mind you, no, this was on Saturday. Thankfully, this was on Saturday. But
it's a weekend thing.
Now, mind you, let me give you a little bit of a spoiler alert. Spoiler alert: this was not as engaging as what is it? Money, Guns, and a Happy and a Merry Christmas.
Yes.
Is it Money, Guns, or Guns, Money?
Money, Guns, and a Merry Christmas.
That one. So. I wasn't as engaged. Uh-huh. However, it was still very, very funny. And it was still something that I did breeze through and rush through with the other parts. I did find I went the Amy route, and I found the full version of it on Daily Motion. And I did, because again, I'm not downloading the app.
Yes.
It was ridiculous. Oh, no. And I was like, I was looking at it, I'm like, Spencer would absolutely die from watching this.
Here's the thing. I just typed in "you fired" and a tech genius auto filled in as the.
Oh, no.
That's not good.
Look, here's the thing. Real Shorts, or whoever the overarching company is that manages their marketing, is absolutely hitting all of those metrics. They know their demographic. They are firing and retargeting on all cylinders. Because they are like, I think it's like a weekly or every 2 week kind of thing. I don't know. But they are hitting their market, and they are hitting it hard, because these things are populating. And it's probably just a retargeting thing that they're doing from the first sweep they did last month with guns, money guns or whatever. But this week, so I watched it, and I think I laughed more at the ridiculousness of it than I should have, because it really didn't make a lot of sense. And honestly, I was just more intrigued as to how bad they could represent it. Mm-hmm. There were things they were talking about, like security breaches and network breaches and companies getting hacked and this one guy doing it all and fixing everything. And then he's like this golden child of like an AI creator, someone who builds AI projects, essentially, mm-hmm. models. And this company's, the CEO's son comes in to just help or do whatever he's doing. And he ends up firing the tech genius that his dad had came in to beg to be a part of his company, not knowing who he was. Gets him mixed up with someone else who has the same name, Eric something. They both have the same name. The only difference is the tech genius has a K in Eric and not a C.
Oh, Lord.
And so he fires him. The other guy comes in and pretends to be him, saves the day by finding code that the other guy had written on his tablet, using it as a patch, and fixes everything. And like the CEO son's like, oh, yeah, I knew I did a good job, but whatever. The CEO is like away because he's sick or something. And the tech genius ends up getting picked up by a rival company who is ran and led by this woman that used to go to college with the tech genius. I'm not going to get into the details because it's kind of like self-explanatory as you watch it.
And they fall in love and have babies and destroy the company.
It's not even like that.
They don't even get that cool?
No. She is so forward. He's in the lobby of the current company that he was at after getting fired because he was waiting for his girlfriend who he had been for a year, whom the CEO's son woos her to him, making her think that he must have been a loser. They use that word a lot, much like in the other one, like how poor, like salesman is the trigger word for that other one. This one is loser.
So confused.
Okay, here's what I really need an answer to. Is there someone in this, I don't want to call it a movie, but this motion picture where they the actor is as good as that mom from the last one.
Yeah.
Okay, good.
Like there's a scene so it
you're
it,
like done.
There's actually like there's two of them. So
there's two?
So because like I think you know what's funny? They do ultimate villain and then nastiest person really well in these movies. Because the ultimate villain, which is the son in this one, he's despicable. He looks like he needs to get his butt whooped, like on the regular. He looks like that type of person. And he's like maybe in his early 20s. The other side of that is the actual...
nastiest person?
No. Yeah, the nastiest person is the ex-girlfriend. She ends up on their one-year anniversary, mind you, when he gets fired. That's their 1 year. She dumps him to be with the CEO's son. And she's just over the top ridiculous. Like
Spencer's like excellent.
And yeah, I found it. It's loaded for.
Oh Lord! This yeah. We're not doing. What we
yeah,
did
no,
last
no, 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 not no. This time.
This is just me.
But you're like, but mind you, it is ridiculous, and there are and mind you that other CEO, the other company CEO, she is so forward. She's like she finds out that they've let him go, they fired him. So she's alerted to it. So her and her assistant go directly to that other company to let that guy know that he can come work for them. And she comes right up to him and tells him, and he can have whatever he wants.
No.
And it's like, mind you, she's ultimately pitted as the person that he's going to be with in this movie, but it gets really awkward at times. Mm. So, it's interesting. I don't really know how all of them pan out, like all the other movies. And I know we saw a couple of trailers last week. I feel like they might be hit or miss in terms of like hitting that just ridiculous factor on the level of Money, Guns, and A Merry Christmas. But this is becoming a really weird and random thing. And I get it. I'm getting targeted and retargeted. It's fine. I really don't care.
They hooked you.
Oh yeah, I really don't care. It's one of those random things where I'm looking at, you know, Venn diagrams of whatever. I'm looking at like circuitry, diagrams, and I'm looking at engineering things. And all of a sudden, it goes to, and I don't have a girlfriend anymore, and I got fired from my job, and it's like, go on. It's just been interesting. Like these types of movies. Or I'm sorry, Spencer. These types of motion pictures, I really didn't get on that Quibi train, but I can see the allure of like the because it doesn't look like one of those types of movies where or those clips where the movie was originally shot in widescreen format, and then they like you can see when they have to move the focus of the frame to fit what's going on. It looks like it's filmed in a vertical format.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I it is interesting to see a movie in that format. And again, I don't know how well that translates over a long period of time. I might get done with this like by next month. I might not be done with this until next year. Who knows? But yeah, I just, you know, it's fun. It's interesting. Why are you looking at me weird like that, intern? What's going on?
You're not down for another ride.
I can't handle it. Not right now. Not like this. Not like this, Spencer. I didn't have time to catch my breath. I can't handle another one.
I mean, we had a bit of a break.
We did have a break,
but that
yeah.
was the impact. It wasn't a long enough break. And I don't think I'm ready to go back to vertical format. Like, I can't do it again.
Hey, vertical format is always out there, stalking us all. Come back.
Yep. And talk about accessible films. That brings us to our conversation of the evening, and that is our review on the recently dropped made-for-TV movie of Star Trek Section 31. This movie brought to us by Mr. Spencer over here was one that actually wasn't on my radar, but Spencer had known about it for a while. And so we planned for it. We watched it about 2 weeks ago or about a week and a half ago because we did see it before the last time we recorded and then the chaos of last week, thanks to Amy.
I did the notes. I was a good intern.
So we are here now. So Spencer, kick things off with that official synopsis goodness.
Foreign Terran Emperor Philippa Giorgio from the Mirror Universe rejoins a shadowy division of Starfleet, Section 31. Tasked with protecting the Federation through unsanctioned tactics, haunted by her past sins, Georgiou must confront her own darkness while leading a team of unconventional operatives to save the universe and answer the question of whether redemption is truly possible for someone like her.
Directed by, I'm going to butcher this, Olatunde Osunanami, Osunsanmin. Written by Craig Sweeney, Bo Yeon Kin, and Erica Lippolt. The film stars Omari Hardwick, Sam Richardson, Casey Roll, Robert Kaczynski, Sven Rory Grock, James Hiroyuki Lau, and the incandescent Michelle Yao. A couple key pieces about the film. This is the first Star Trek move. I'm assuming that's supposed to say movie.
It said movie one time.
This is the first Star Trek movie in 9 years since the release of Star Trek Beyond in 2016. It's really been 9 years since the last movie?
Yep.
Has there not been anything else like made for TV since then?
No, this is the first one. They got the ball rolling again on a fourth Kelvin Star Trek movie, but we'll see if they actually get that one off the ground.
Yeah, when you say fourth, are we talking like with, well, I guess obviously if they don't know, like if everybody's going to be Chris coming Pine. Back from it.
Well, most of them, except for the guy who died.
Oh, Anton Yelchin.
Yeah.
You're like, listen. He did.
Another key piece of information, the character Rachel Garrett, played by Casey Roll, first appeared in the season three, The Next Generation episode, Yesterday's Enterprise, as captain of the USS Enterprise C. Is this true, Spencer?
Yes.
Can you elaborate?
There's not really much to elaborate on. There was a temporal nonsense event where the Enterprise C got to meet the Enterprise D, but like time had shifted because they were taken out of a really important historical battle.
Mm-hmm.
So Jean-Luc Picard, in charge of the Enterprise, was trying to send them back, and Rachel Garrett was there for part of the show until she died unexpectedly. Doing something I can't quite remember. I meant to rewatch it. But yeah, she dies during this episode.
But she's alive during this movie.
During the episode in TNG.
Yes.
Okay, gotcha. Okay, that's cool. Not that she dies, but it's cool that they reference that.
Mm.
Another key piece of information. Dang, Amy, how many things did you put in here?
A
one-shot comic book featuring Georgiou and also titled Star Trek Section 31 is set to be released by IDW Publishing on February 5th, 2025, written by Alyssa Wong, former writer of Star Wars, Dr. Aphra.
Yes. It's the comic book person in me. I'm sorry. I got excited. Dr. Aphra was great, and it is a great run for she made it murder
okay.
bots.
It was okay.
She made murder
it,
bots.
It was okay.
I got two more in there if you want to read them.
Yeah, another one of Amy's long-winded ones. Emperor Georgiou's full title, Her Most Imperial Majesty, Mother of the Fatherland, Overlord of Vulcan, Dominus of Kunos.
Cronus.
Cronus?
Cronos.
Cronos?
Yeah.
That's how you... Okay.
Yeah.
Regina Andor, Philippa Georgiou, Augustus, Laponius, Centaurius. It can be translated to Her Most Imperial Majesty, Mother of the Fatherland, Overlord of Vulcan, Master of... Yeah, this is a lot. This is not necessary.
I just like the last part is my favorite.
Okay, Amy, read that whole entire thing. From the beginning.
Cronus? Or
No.
Cronus.
Everything.
Oh, from the top?
From the top. Come on.
But you just read her full
Let's
title.
Let's do it.
Okay. Emperor Georgiou's full title, Her Most Imperial Majesty, Mother of the Fatherland, Overlord of Vulcan, Dominus of Cronos, Regina Andor, Philippa Georgiou, Augustus, Laponus, Centaurus, can be translated into regular English to Her Most Imperial Majesty, Mother of the Fatherland, Overlord of Vulcan, Master of Cronos, Queen of Andor, Philippa Georgiou, the great indestructible leader of the century. Boom.
Yeah, that whole entire note was not necessary.
It was fine.
Yeah, when that came out in Discovery, I was like, that is the longest title.
It was shiny.
There was no purpose for that at all.
No.
And then lastly, in March of 2024, Michelle Yeoh said she was open to making a sequel if the first film was successful. We will talk about that in a second. As we stated, we're going to be talking about this film. And with this movie, it was released on TV, on streaming through Peacock. So if you haven't had a chance.
Paramount, not Peacock.
Oh, it was Paramount?
Paramount Plus.
So it was released through Paramount Plus. So if you haven't seen it, you have access to it if you have the streaming service. So we will be talking about spoilers. So heads up, letting you know now. Spoiler alert. We will be talking about them in detail as we dive into this. So first things first, Star Trek. So the first question is, where are we at in the star date? Spencer.
Okay, so here's the thing about star dates. They are all over the place, kind of mostly made up, and then there's classic star dates and modern star dates. You can get into a real conversation about this, but let me just simplify it. The original series has a set of star dates. Those are numbers kind of don't mean anything to what happens later because like they jump all over the place. TNG forward, they tried to modernize the standard to make some sort of sense. Mm-hmm. So this movie uses a very low star date, which might you would think conflicts with something that happened to Kirk, but it doesn't. Because they like did a reset, like I think the year before this movie takes place, and all the other series like kind of follow that.
So where does it adhere to? Because with the Kelvin universe, is there any integration of that timeline into what's going on in this series?
I'm gonna say technically yes, but we'll say no because that happens way later, and you don't need to even worry about it. It's only really mostly a nod to like Starfleet is aware that that happened.
Gotcha. In another universe.
Yes.
Which is kind of with...
Well, that's because they lost their Spock. And they're like, where did that guy go?
Yeah. Which makes sense.
Where did that guy go? He took a little break. No one's seen him. He went out for milk.
Oh, gosh. No, Spock is not a go out for milk guy. He was doing something really important.
No, here's the thing. Amy's trying to make reference to the storybook, but she's telling two minorities here about people who go out for cigarettes or go out for milk and they're gone ever. It says the story for every minority dad out there.
Calling him a deadbeat dad.
Yeah, that's literally what you just said.
Really bad because what he was doing was trying to deliver something to save a planet and then he just disappeared.
Yep. Like which is what happened in the first Kelvin film.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
Okay. I don't know. I'm not the
But techie. You just said you did know.
You did, yeah. You just said that.
He went out for snacks.
He was a deadbeat dad, apparently.
Oh my gosh.
Them Vulcans and their minorities, those hoodlum Vulcans and their deadbeat dads, apparently. Good job, Ames. You're hitting 100. Go ahead, Spencer.
Okay, so the year that this should roughly take place is around 2324, roughly-ish. That's what a lot of the fans have kind of like agreed on and what kind of makes sense with like where the star dates should fall.
Regarding this particular movie.
Yes.
Okay.
Which is set in the Lost Era. We actually don't get a lot of information from the year 2290, whenever Star Trek Generations and that Kirk scene happens, to the beginning of the Next Generation in the 2364
area. Okay. That's cool.
Yeah, well, so that's why a lot of people were like, ooh, interesting.
Well, let's go ahead and jump over into expectations, talking about what were some of the things that we had in mind. I kind of want to go first because I literally had nothing in mind. Mm. I had no expectations because I wasn't even sure what was it about. I have a brief, just small precursory knowledge of Section 31, just based on what was talked about in the first season. But outside of that, I don't recall.
I thought you watched DS9.
I did watch DS9. Oh, they talk about it in DS9?
Yeah, a lot.
You know, it's been like years since I've seen DS9.
Oh, okay.
it has been ages. Wow, I got to go back and rewatch those now.
Yeah, if you remember, Bashir kept talking to this guy named Sloan.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's Section 31.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, I got to rewatch these. It's like so it's scattered.
It's a good series once you get off after the first season.
Yeah. So again, not really knowing fully what to expect as far as this particular movie. And then obviously it being some kind of a vehicle for Michelle Yeoh. Obviously, you know, there's going to be people who come in just for that. So they have to make sure that there's a focus on her. I'm not too sure what to expect from it. So coming into it, I had a pretty much just open mind and the hopes that this movie lives up to Spencer's hype. Yeah, to be honest, I was going to use Spencer as the gauge. So what about you, Ames? Did you have any expectations?
For the most part, not really, because I knew it was Michelle Yeoh. I had talked to Spencer previously. And I was like, okay, is there anything I need to know? Precursory knowledge. And Spencer basically gave me the gist of who she was playing and how she connected to the universe. But other than that, I had a big old honking goose egg because I know nothing. Yeah.
It's true.
Thanks.
So then the man of the hour, Mr. Spencer, superstar, super fan. You knowing everything you knew going into this movie, like what were some of your expectations for this particular film?
Okay. Because like, I know a lot because like I was like, there when they announced this thing roughly, it seems like 5 years ago.
5 years?
Yeah. Well, that's pandemic happened. So we'll be fair. But yeah, like originally, you know, it was supposed to be a TV series starting here. And I was like, okay, that's like lots of potential there. So going into this, once they had like announced like, oh, it's going to be in the Lost era and like Rachel Garrett's going to make an appearance, people are like, okay, this could like be a thing because we didn't know, like last time we talked about this character, we didn't know where she was going to specifically. Mm-hmm. She could have shown up pretty much anywhere. So this is a really nice, safe time frame for her. Like, because there's nothing really set in stone here, so you can kind of do whatever you want, which is good, because, like, that's been, like, kind of a little bit of a problem with, like, things that are set in the past, is, like, they have a hard time fitting it with the rest of the lore of Star Trek. Mm-hmm. So, going into this, I was optimistic until they released the first trailer. I don't know if you saw it.
Nope.
No.
But it gave a vibe of Suicide Squad.
Not the Suicide Squad, just
the original Suicide Squad. And that's kind of what made me, okay, this, really? I will be open, but I am now nervous for this project.
Yeah. I don't think I saw, when did the first trailer drop?
December.
Oh, say, okay. So it was fairly recent.
Yes.
Okay. So the first trailer dropped in December. And so was there any pushback? Was there any like,
oh no, there was because we were like, what is this? Because like, Section 31 previously has been like the like hush hush, like Starfleet doesn't really talk about it, but when Starfleet has a problem, it kind of magically goes away because Section 31 does something like genocide. That's kind of their thing.
What?
So yeah, Section 31 is shady.
Oh my god.
So like that's why it's interesting to put her there, because like it's a kind of an interesting contrast, especially since we're getting Rachel Garrett. I was assuming, you know, the main tension would be coming from her. And like, since like, she's supposed to be like, you know, Starfleet, mm-hmm. like her coming into like, you can't just kill whoever's in your way. That's what I was expecting coming into this
movie. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So we watched the film and obviously we finished the movie in full. We didn't have to pause or anything and we saw it and we had thoughts. And so our first impressions right outside the gate, let's start with Amy.
This should have been a movie. I mean, a TV series. This movie should have been a TV series.
Yeah. Intern's batting 100.
I knew it was going to be a pick on an intern episode, but this movie should have been a TV show. That was literally my first thing right out of us finished watching. And I got so stuck on it because there are things that I want to talk about it later on. But yeah, that was like my big sticking point that I couldn't get over.
Yeah, I have to agree. I feel like coming from the perspective, so not even putting on the minimal Star Trek knowledge that I do carry, not even putting that hat on, just putting from the perspective of a movie critic, this movie felt like it was not made to be a film, like a full-fledged film. It didn't feel like it was, you know, well-considered as far as the timing, as far as all the information being put in. There was a lot of things that were in here that I wanted more, and there was a lot of things that were in here that I wanted less. And a good director, a good, you know, creative team would know how to balance that out. Oddly enough, much to the akin of that first Suicide Squad movie, there were things that they put in this movie that didn't need to be. There were things that they didn't put in this movie that they needed to put in. And it ultimately felt rushed. And I feel like, almost to the point where I feel like there were too many cooks in the kitchen for this, but I don't know the details. But we'll dig deeper into those thoughts and opinions.
Actually, yes, I have some very interesting stories for highlights and issues later on.
Yay!
I can't wait. But before, I need your first impressions because yours is the one I'm more inclined to hear as far as the thought here.
That does say a lot. I was like... Because I can tell that this is meant to be an onboarding experience. But like, I was like, why would you ever do this?
Yeah.
Because there's so much that's weird about it that just like brings confusion for people who've been following along. And then like the people who haven't will probably just skate through this because like they don't know.
Yeah.
But like, I also feel like this is so different that if you did like this for some reason, you're not going to find anything else like this in Star Trek currently.
No, 100%.
So it's kind of like it's a weird, weird duck that's just sitting at this table where everyone else is very different.
Yeah.
So like, I mean, if you want to move in a direction, that's fine. But like, I feel like this needs to be thought out much better than it was, to be perfectly honest.
Kind of hitting real quick on a thing because Amy didn't put that point in the notes, mark against. as far as like the performers in this film, obviously we have a lot of key players in this one that actually hold pretty prominent roles, such as, you know, outside of Michelle Yeoh, we'll get into that, but like Amari Hardwick, who plays Alok Sahar. He actually, we've seen him before in movies such as Sorry to Bother You. He's an incredible performer. And oddly enough, I could see him do a movie similar like this if given the opportunity. Like, he has the chops to be able to do this. His the biggest issue is, like, the acting wasn't an issue. It was the direction. Let's just be honest. 100%. The direction was completely part of the issue. They had an incredible cast that could have potentially been, you know, they could have done great.
Yeah.
The problem is that...
Some of them did do great.
Yeah. Sam Richardson... Obviously, if you know him from several different elements, whether if it was the series
Ted Lasso,
he's been in a bunch of other things.
He was in a movie, an indie movie, wasn't it? Werewolves or Wolves? What was it that just came out?
He was in...
It's something that it's like an indie
project. He was in Velma.
Well, it was an indie project that like literally just came out. I think it was something with werewolves, but he's like a sheriff. In like a small town.
Yeah.
And it's something ridiculous. Like, and it just came out. I can't even, I'm really trying to figure it out.
No. So it's from 2021. It's called Werewolves Within. but he's in that one. I mean, he was in Veep. He was in Detroiters. He's been in quite a bit of different things. But Sam Richardson's one of those performers that's always just... He's fun. He brings a lot of like versatility to the role. And in this particular film, he played a character that essentially kind of turns into other things. So it kind of fits the bill. Excuse me. Then you have Casey Rohl, who played Rachel Garrett. I don't recall that episode, or I didn't see that episode that you're talking about. So I don't know how akin she was to that particular role.
I mean, she was not in that episode that long from memory. So really you're kind of free to do whatever you want.
Okay. So character, interpretation was just left wide open.
Yeah. Because there's like a 20 year gap. So you can kind of like explain away pretty much anything you want in that much time.
Yeah. I do have to say, one of the more fun, characters in the film, was, Sven Røygaard, who played Fuzz, really crazy character that I thought looked like he was having more fun than anyone else in the movie.
Yeah.
But yeah, were there any, obviously, we'll talk about the illustrious. Well, let's just go ahead and talk about it. Amy, go ahead and talk about Michelle Yeoh.
I love you, Michelle Yeoh. I love you. Everything that you are in is wonderful to see. And really in this regard, and I told Spencer, she is the reason that I actually was like, oh, I would love to see what she did in Discovery, because this was like having a sip of something really good, and you're like, okay, I could go for more. And it wasn't, and we'll get into talking about issues and the story and everything else. It was simply her being her full Michelle Yeoh-ness that I was like, and I turned to you and I was like, is this how she's like in the show? And you're like, yeah, that's her. And I was like, then I want to see the show. Like, I think that was part of that driving force. I'm not going to gush as much because I give space for everyone to gush because I like Michelle Yeoh.
Okay, just remember, though, she's in a show with an ensemble cast.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, like, it's balanced very differently. Yeah. She doesn't have as much time to breathe here as she does in this movie.
Yeah.
She was definitely the Will Smith of this particular movie, like she was in that and Suicide Squad. So she's the draw, if you will, for a lot of people.
So in the show, she's Deadshot, but in here she's her. Is that what you were saying?
Yeah. So essentially, the whole purpose of Will Smith being in that Suicide Squad movie is to create connectivity for people who don't know DC movies to go run to the theaters to see that movie because it's Will Smith. It's the Man in Black. Blah, blah, blah. People know Will Smith, so they're going to go see that.
Huh. Okay.
Was there anybody else that you could name beforehand in that group that you could say people knew outside of
Margot Robbie? Margot Robbie. I don't know if they did. What's his fit? Morbius.
You can't even say their names because they don't. You don't even know.
Because I don't. That's know what I'm saying. Morbius.
So anyway,
I've removed his name from my brain. This Morbius guy. What? He was that bad. I know it was Jared Leto or something like that.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. Moving on. It is unfortunate that the fact that her role in this whole movie was kind of contingent on her carrying a lot of this film. Mm-hmm. Because as much as she's capable of it, and again, you're going to hear this a lot, but when you have a movie that has bad direction, it becomes ultimately impossible to bring success to a movie when it's just solely on your shoulders. And more than likely, the people who are supposed to be, giving creative direction have that authority removed from them. Again, to Spencer's point he made earlier, I'm pretty sure there's a ton of stories and I can't wait to hear them. But before we do that, let's talk a little bit about the story of this movie. Mm-hmm. So, Ames, why don't you give us the nutshell of this bad boy?
The nutshell of this bad boy is they've lost Emperor Giorgio. She's, air quotes, lost her. And the control is sending out in video game format, sending out a team to go collect her to find a giant weapon because they think they can do it, a la Suicide Squad. Mm. And they find her on an astro?
Okay. It's a ship.
A ship that's like a pleasure ship. That's the nice way to put it. Mm-hmm. And she is being all of her wonderful yesness. She clocks everybody that's there already. She knows why they showed up. And then it's kind of like, help us do the thing. Be good. Help us do the thing. And she's like, okay, I will. And then suddenly the big bad weapon, of course, gets snatched away and it's a race against time, the clock, to find the person that it is. And maybe there's a mole? Question mark? Could it be one of the team? And the team members are dying off? What? Was that good?
Sure. I mean that's the gist of it. I mean, yeah, it's the
basic story.
The basic premise of any, ensemble cast coming together who don't normally fit together and have to fit together for the purpose of the greater good kind of thing. This story really tried to push the importance of recognizing that this is a team while also very quickly recognizing the expendability of this team right from the get-go.
We literally lost somebody. I don't even think we put her in there. Humberly something or other. She plays a character literally that you meet for a few minutes and then within the first, eighth of the film, she dead.
Yeah, she's gone real fast.
So you're like, she's got superpowers. She does this. Dead.
Yeah.
And we're just like, wow. So nothing even getting, she didn't matter. And then you're like, oh, so nobody matters except Michelle Yeoh. Got it.
Which, again, when you have a movie that is focused on the vehicle of this, the star driver, if you will, of this film. Yeah, everybody else is expendable, which, to be quite honest, I wouldn't know if that particular actress, the one who plays, what is her name, Mel, in the movie, I wouldn't even know if she's a good actress, to be honest, in this particular role, because she didn't have enough time. It seemed like she had the makings of it. And again, going back to the premise that this was originally set to be a series instead of a film, I would have liked to see, every time I think about this, I always think this feels like if we saw Serenity before watching Firefly.
Good point. 100%.
This is kind of like taking all of that information and cramming it, which, thanks to having the series years before the movie came out, we were already primed with Firefly. So we had inklings, we had notions, we were attached to people already. There was reasons why, we were so invested in certain characters and certain arcs and the dynamics between certain people. And so when Serenity came out, a lot of those moments that were most impactful hit as hard as they could because we already had time spent. This is if we saw that movie first and it's all those impactful moments are oh yeah, don't you feel, because this happened to this character and they could be together, but they're not. And you're like, okay, like, cool. All right. Homie, do him. You know, it's like there's no concern. There's no care. There was so much of that vibe in this movie where I feel like the story tried to create so many
stories, because that's the other thing that I wanted to talk about, the rush on it. Like that first section, no pun intended, that first section of this was like, oh, it's an extended pilot. Like, it made sense. Yeah. It had breathing space. It set, you know, it set stakes. Like, they could have just been like, and we're going to leave it here. Like, there have been pilots that haven't made it, but the pilot itself is still good. And you're like, we could have done something. And then they're like, do you know what? We're going to cram episodes 2, 3, and 7 right on this sucker. And then we're going to go. And that's where you end up like, there's incomplete arcs. There's rushed arcs. There's no opportunity to ingratiate or to fall in love with a character or even care about them. Like, everybody literally except Michelle Yeoh is a throwaway, and it sucks.
Well, and it's one thing. So here's the thing to that statement. It's one thing to create the character to be a throwaway. It's another thing to have the character hold importance to a team and then kill them off. Like, if they're meant to be throwaway people, then there wouldn't be so much recognition of like the names, the quirks, all these things, all these elements about them. But if that's what you're making it out to be, like if that's the intention, then there shouldn't be so much character, so to speak, of that character, yeah. Like of that particular individual. There shouldn't be so much to be expressed by that person if they're just, you know,
if they're red shirting.
Yeah.
Yeah. To put it bluntly, yes. And that's the sad thing about this movie, is that as much as like there are certain characters that I felt like were annoying, that was their character arc. That was their purpose in it. They were meant to be, you know, the jock who's like, oh, this is my tough suit and blah, blah, blah. Like, okay, I get it. You're a meathead idiot. Cool. But you're a meathead idiot who's been established as such, so that means that there's going to be a character arc for that, because every story goes into an arc that has growth or digression. Mm-hmm. And there were so many things that were going on with this that I'm like, should I care if people die? Or,
well, I just really feel like, what,
there's many things that causes this to be like unsuccessful. But really, the runtime is really where I feel like a lot of the problems lie in, of just like compressing it to be a movie. Make it a limited run series.
Exactly.
Like, that's a thing.
Yes,
like,
it is.
Or if anything, make it a two-parter. Make it a large two-parter where it's like kind of like with the movie. What is his name? Andy Muschietti. What Andy Muschietti did with the It movie. The It movie was split into two chapters. You had the first half, or like even with Zack Snyder's Rebel Moon. Again, that wasn't as successful, but still.
That's why there was silence from us, because we're like, we didn't watch that one.
I did not watch Rebel
Moon. I watched the first part. I didn't see the second one.
I didn't.
But to that extent, like, create a two-parter that has equal, like, well, that has ample time in each one. So you create a two-hour first part, and you set it to where it is something that is phenomenal. It's massive. It's impactful. It's epic. It creates the story that builds on these characters that we are supposed to be investing into. And then leave us on a cliffhanger, make us wait a month or 2 months. Mm-hmm. Build that anticipation, create that. And then if people are still pining after that, then you have all the means to make a series. Yeah. Like, you build off of that. But don't drop it all. This movie was barely an hour and a half.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was 90 minutes. Like, I'm sorry, to be exact, I apologize. This movie was 95 minutes long.
Man,
and
I was off by 3 minutes.
We got to remember, too, that 5 to 7 minutes is trailer. I mean, is end credits.
Credits, that's
so,
right. Oh my gosh.
So you're looking at 90 minutes exactly. So I was right, 90 minutes. So you're looking at about 89, 90 minutes of the most complicated organization within Starfleet, of a franchise that has lasted over 60, 70 years. No. It's about 70 years now. It's been around for about...
Yeah, since the 60s.
So, yeah, about 60 years. 60, 70 years. It's been around for that long.
Mm-hmm.
And to have one of the most complex organizations with that, within that entire franchise, and give it a 90-minute story feels very, very like, well, first off, lack of respect for that. It feels very diminishing to every person who actually has a vested interest into that particular, you know, storyline. And honestly, it almost throws like this middle finger to anybody who has actually wanted to invest into like creating this story, building out this micro universe of a ragtag group of whatevers. Even if it's the Suicide Squad in Star Trek, give us a full series, give us, you know, a compelling opening episode, give us something that, you know, leans towards there's more to come if you want, and we can build it. Because I mean, the one thing that you recognize about Star Trek and in most fandoms, but mostly like Star Trek as well, is they're one of the key groups, the resilience of the group, the resilience of the fan base, the fact that there's been so much that has been thrown at them. And I can attest on the Star Wars side, Star Wars fans have become very unforgiving to the point to where I have known diehard fans who used to constantly brag about being in line for the first film. Like that's, and we're talking like, you know, oh yeah, I remember when I got to see when I was a kid, I was in line, 1970, whatever. And the latest trilogy out of that franchise pretty much shut them off from wanting to see another Star Wars movie.
100%. I mean, somehow Palpatine returns.
100% to that. Oh my goodness. But that's what I'm saying though. It's like that kind of thing for Star Wars. You have people who are kind of hot and cold in that. I feel like Star Trek's fan base is one of those ones. It's like there's so many facets to it because of the longevity of the history of it that you have to respect the fan base to an extent where you're like, all right, I know that you as the fan have been watching this for maybe 20 years, maybe 30 years, maybe 40 years, maybe 10 years. And your knowledge is vast because we've created the language for it. We've created databases for it. We've created full encyclopedias. We have full breakdowns of how all these ships work. We tell you how these things work, these gadgets work. We've mourned with you with the death of Spock. We've mourned with you with the death of whoever. We've seen these things go, those things go, this, that, and the other. So we're going to take the time to create something that honors a small portion of this franchise to give you a better glimpse of something that we have yet to kind of bring out and you know, bring to fruition. And this like feels like the biggest test of loyalty for Star Trek. In my personal opinion, I don't know how it's been received because I don't follow a lot of Star Trek.
I've actually been following a lot of people.
Really?
I was very curious about this.
So what has been the reaction overall from a lot of other Star Trek fans?
What the heck is going on over there? honestly, a lot of people are kind of confused about
rightly so.
Why this and what's happening? And like going back to the information I got, because this also kind of fits in here pretty well. It's interesting that you talk about like respect to the fandom.
Yeah.
Because what was his name? Robert Kaczynski. He's been in some interviews after the movie came out, and he's been letting people know.
Now, hold on. Robert who?
The meathead.
Yeah, the meathead guy.
Oh,
the
okay.
The cyborg meathead guy.
Yeah.
The suit is me.
Yes.
The guy from Pacific Rim.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's right.
He was in Pacific Rim.
He's the Australian son.
He's the son.
To the other guy. The guy who's like, yeah, don't get in my way, Riley.
The one that's, with the dog. I
don't remember that. That's bulldog. Awesome, though. Yeah, he's been on an interview circuit. A few of them come out later this week, so I don't have all of the info. But, like, he has been, well, some of the tidbits, I'm like, I don't agree with you on that. But some of it has been interesting from, like, what the studio was thinking. Mm-hmm. Because normally you don't get that part of the interview, and apparently the studio is kind of in panic mode from the sounds of it.
Rightly so.
Because like they are basically like, yeah, we're doing this because we feel like Star Trek is dying and we're trying to save it. Yeah.
What? Nobody saw my face of confusion and Spencer heard it. Not only heard it, but saw it firsthand. Like, I'm there. What?
Yeah, because like that's why like and you going off about like Star Trek fans, like Star Trek fans made their own dang show when there was no show on air. Like the fan projects were a thing from like early 2010s to like right before Discovery came out because like there was nothing on and they kind of wanted to see Star Trek. And what was interesting about those films is that they got actual actors from Star Trek to be in some of the fan projects.
Really?
Yeah. Like, oh my gosh, why is the second I want to read for someone's name, it just flies out. The guy who's the helmsman of the Enterprise with Kirk. Why am I blanking on his name? I really should not be.
Nuclear Wessels?
No, him.
George Takei?
Yes.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
I don't know how I forgot.
Sorry. How do you forget?
I don't know.
How do you forget George Takei?
It's so weird because I follow him on Blue Sky this week.
Oh my.
He's so fantastic.
Yeah, George Takei has been in there. Denise Crosby, she's from The Next Generation. She also showed up. Like, there's been quite a few people who show up for these fan films that they used to do, and like people like them. And so you come to now, and I'm like, even if like Paramount's like, yeah, we're out of Star Trek, like honestly, I wouldn't be worried because like it came back many, many times. This is the like Star Trek is the like story of how a like fan base can just keep something in hibernation and it comes back when it needs to.
Well, and the resilience of it. I mean, going back to that, like it's obvious that the fan base is absolutely like dedicated to not only this franchise, but the world building aspect of it. There's been no doubt in my mind as to whether or not, you know, the longevity of this fan base will continue, because there will always be Trekkies without a doubt. And much like anyone else knows, kind of like what you're talking about, if there is a lack of content, the fans will make the content.
Yeah.
You know, it's always been the case. So the fact that there's even a concern that there's quote unquote not enough Star Trek out there is ridiculous, because isn't there still Lower Decks out there now?
No, Lower Decks ended. So now I wasn't going to talk about this, but Paramount is being real stupid, because they don't want to pay more money to their actors. So what they've been doing is a lot of the shows have been ending at season 5 for contract negotiations.
Mm-hmm. And they never pick them up?
And they end at season... He just said they end at season 5.
Yeah, but they never come back and get a new contract. Well, when
a series ends, they're not usually meant to come back. So
So that's been a thing happening. So it kind of seems like every series has like a 5-season limit. And really, I feel like they've just been really mishandling Star Trek, especially like the recent series. Mm-hmm. Because like, you have like the ending of Lower Decks, which was a fantastic show. But like they had introduced a show for kids called Star Trek Prodigy,
which
was
that.
Actually quite fantastic, because I felt like they did a great job of like, honestly, now I'm talking about Prodigy. This movie should have looked at Prodigy, because I feel like Prodigy had the best balance I've seen of it's for both new people and old people. It had something like it was for kids. So it like had something to like onboard kids on the Star Trek, which is great. But it also had something, if you were a fan of Voyager and Captain Janeway, there's something for you there too. It was actually very fun to watch, but they kicked it off after one season.
One season?
Yeah. And they were like, but we already had done season 2. It just needs to be edited. And they're like, we're not doing this.
I'm sorry. They had a complete 2 in the can, and it just needed final edits.
Well, and so kicked over. I wasn't done. It got kicked over to Netflix. It got picked up over there. But that was ridiculous to me.
But why would you do that if all your content's on your...
It didn't make sense for branding either, because like you can't be the home of Star Trek unless you want Prodigy. You have to go over to Netflix.
Yeah. But it's only season 2, or did you get season 1 as well?
They put season 1 on Netflix as well.
I was like, they're like, listen, you can only watch season 2 on Netflix, and you have to come back for season... that's so frustrating.
So like, really, Paramount is becoming like their own worst enemy, because they're not taking care of the franchise as they should, I feel like.
That's really interesting, because I mean, obviously you hear a lot of the stories that are going on, like with Disney Plus and what they're doing with their content. And then obviously with what's going on with Netflix and them booming into acquiring, you know, other elements, including live streaming certain events and whatnot. HBO Max is another one that seems to be imploding on itself with the Discovery whole aspect and whatnot.
Zaslav.
So to hear like even Paramount Plus with what should already be like a easy moneymaker for them in just not even focusing on brand new content coming out rapidly, but even just cultivating and you know, creating or creating a space for people to go to for that kind of content, that should be their biggest like marketing value.
Yeah.
Like to say like, hey, by the way, if you want to catch everything as a Trekkie, we got it all. Oh. Check it out.
That's how they got most of the Trekkies. Also, like, they just seem like the concern is like, oh, people don't want new things. They only want 1,000 more episodes of TNG. And I'm like, we just want good Star Trek. That's
yeah.
all
we want. Yeah. Which, I mean, TNG had its moments, but I mean, TNG was a great, you know, transition point from the original series.
Yeah. And I also like to point out, TNG had a horrible, horrible first two seasons.
It did.
It's unwatchable. It was
boring as hell.
And also the one racist show where all the actors are like, every time it's mentioned, it's like, nope.
Yeah.
Nope.
I just, it's ridiculous to me that a company who has all of this like ability and content doesn't know how to market as well as it should regarding, it's just crazy. What other story, you said you had other stories on the back end about what's going on, or was that a lot of it?
No, there's a lot of it right there. It's like, Robert has been coming out being like, this is what they're saying. And I'm like, honestly, I just want to thank him for even saying anything, because like, usually you're just like, why are they doing this? Yeah. But like, even though I think it's a dumb reason, it's a reason that kind of provides so much clear context for why this movie is the way it is and why it's kind of a mess, because like, they are trying their damnedest to just get new people on so that like they have like, you know, new stuff. But I'd like to point out, you know, I got into Star Trek with TNG at like kind of the bad bit, and I loved it. And you know, you never know what's going to happen. If you just let things breathe, you might be fine.
Yeah.
Just don't stab yourself in the foot because you're not instantly getting like millions of new subscribers.
Or even take the other approach of like, okay, you want to create new content. We don't need seasons to come out sequentially, one immediately right after the other.
Mm-hmm.
You can create space, especially if, no pun intended, you can create space in between each season to give them, you know, a full amount of time to, you know, make the story blossom and you know, really bloom. And even at that too, as well, in terms of blooming, like you can create content that doesn't absolutely have to be, you know, oh, this has to be like star studded and needs to have all this and that, and needs to do these things and that and the other. And, you know, and we're going to throw it out there, market it or whatever. Like you can give things time. Like you can break it down. Kind of like what we talked about with Rebel Moon, with what they do with like, you could take the entire season of like Stranger Things and, you know, at least like one of the seasons and try to compress it and maybe do a half decent job of creating like a 2.5 hour movie. Maybe. I'm saying maybe. Don't look at me like that.
No, it's not a bad thing. It's also, I also think that they are so focused on all the people that are binging for the one day where they get those astronomical numbers, instead of like, it's frustrating. Yes, I'm part of the Star Wars people. It was frustrating that Star Wars for Disney Plus, they'd be like, 2 episodes, come back next week. And part of me is like, oh, I hate it, I want it now. And then a part of me is like, no, this is what we used to do. You to tune in.
Because ultimately, like, it becomes autonomous. Like, you're like, all right, what day is it? Tuesday. Did the Acolyte drop? The Acolyte dropped. Okay, let's watch it. Or, oh, it's you know, it's Wednesday. Did this drop? Yeah, it dropped. Okay, we'll watch it. Like, yes, there's a sense of expectation, but it still had people coming back.
Well, see, they are doing actually that, because like, Trek seems to be dropping on Thursdays for the most part. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's good to get that cycle.
Mm-hmm.
But like, I don't know, this movie just, it really should have been a series, really, to be perfectly honest.
I agree with that.
Really different, to be perfect. Like, because like that opening with like Jamie Lee Curtis like,
oh, surprise, spoiler,
as Control.
As Control, spoiler.
Okay, first off, the opening shouldn't have been from Control. It should have been from Michelle Yeoh's standpoint.
Uh-huh.
Give you the character history and then like launch off from, oh, these stupid Starfleet people, I can see them from a mile away. I feel like it would make more sense to just be from her perspective than Control's perspective. Now, Control is a slap in the face, just to be perfectly clear. Control was a thing Michelle Yeoh's team was running from at the end of the season two of Discovery.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole point of them going into the future in the first place was to get away from Control so that it couldn't like form into like this AI thing.
Okay.
That happened anyway. And it's just fine. And we don't care. And we're not talking about it. It's super weird.
Mm.
And I don't know why it's in this movie, because like really it shouldn't be.
See, I thought you were going to bring up my thing where the open was like, it's like, hello, recruits.
Yes. Weird.
And it's all video game. It's video game.
I was getting Wrecked Ralph vibes of that.
Yeah.
We're going to kill the cybugs. Like, it really did feel like that. And I remember watching it. And I was like, what the heck is this? Like, are we doing a video game? And then, like, I think we've just kind of slid into highlights and issues. But this was like a big sticking point for me where I was like, I don't understand why you would do this. You wouldn't even do this at the beginning of a like anything unless you were specifically a video game movie.
Well, or you're super just, you know,
out of options in time.
Well, unaware of like how exposition is supposed to be used. Like, this is not a Metal Gear Solid video game. We don't need to have so much exposition at the beginning that you need to explain in full detail all the parameters of what we're about to experience or what they're about to re-explain to the characters in the movie. So.
Yeah, and I like your idea, Spencer, of like having Michelle Yeoh go through the exposition of like, this is where we're at, this is what's going on. That would have fed more into that understanding of like, again, going towards what Eddie said, with Firefly, you usually get some exposition from Mal at the beginning of the episodes, and even the same thing happened with Serenity. And it's natural, and because it's coming from somebody who's in the midst of it, it makes more sense. And no offense to Jamie Lee Curtis, we love her. Mm-hmm. She's wonderful. This felt literally like, this is what we're going to do. This is what's going to happen. And you've got to check off the boxes. And now, cut to Michelle. Like, the heck?
Yeah. And oddly enough, it was funny that you had mentioned they were going for that whole Suicide Squad motif, which, if you're going to try to emulate, first off, if you're going to try to emulate any movie, that's probably not the movie you're going to want to emulate.
At least shoot for the Suicide Squad.
Yeah, at least shoot for something successful. but also on the flip side, if they had done it from the perspective of Michelle Yeoh, that would have been like this incredible, super neo-noir, sci-fi-ish, like French, you know, type of like one of those detective classic movies, like a neo-noir movie, almost like Blade Runner-esque, because then you would have had like, if you would, or you know what, like a Cowboy Bebop type style, like that would have been like from her perspective, like, you know, they came in, they didn't think I noticed, but they came into my place and blah blah blah. Like,
yeah, that would have been fun.
That would have been great. Yeah. Like, if you would have taken it from that perspective and then given it a little bit more of that. Again, the thought process goes is like, I don't think there was a thought process behind this film. Unfortunately, they saw dollar signs when Michelle Yeoh won an Academy Award, and they're like, oh, awesome. We can't just do this as a series. Now we got to do it as a movie. It just makes no sense. It's completely rude. Like, it's, again, and I don't shy away from my statement, it is an absolute middle finger to the fan base. And it sounds like, from Spencer's, you know, reaction, as well as his findings, that the fan base is reacting in kind.
Yeah.
So, and to Amy's point, this does move over into our highlights and issues.
You got a bit of those hickey burps over there?
I do. I'm trying to control them.
nobody can control them.
So, I will go next, because I know Amy kind of touched, unless you had some other ones.
Oh, I've got a whole bunch more, but I want to, like, I'm going to move with the gentleness so you get an opportunity to, like, throw something in there.
Honestly, like, I guess my biggest issue with the movie, because, okay, I take this back. One of my highlights that I would like to say I was impressed with the movie was My one highlight was the choreography was really great. You know, having Michelle Yeoh and the gentleman, James Hiroyuki Liao, they did phenomenal work as as martial artists, as Michelle Yeoh being the incredible martial artist that she is, even threatening the band at the Academy Awards that she'll beat them up if they keep trying to play her off the stage. I mean,
that's fantastic.
She's phenomenal. And Mr. Liao is also equally, not equally, but also as good in this film. And they both have great chemistry in the movie. So the fact that they are able to not only act well together, but they're also able to do choreography together, that was actually really done well. Everyone else's choreography, hot trash. But their choreography was phenomenal. My biggest issue, though, and this is one that I talked about when we finished the film. The effect work in this movie is dismal, to say the least. There were so many things wrong with this movie. The ADR was off.
The fact there was ADR and it was so aggressive was just like...
Yeah, there were moments in this movie where... Well, I mean, because most films, especially when you have large, complex sets like this, you have to have ADR. Because of the fact that, you know, you can't get a microphone in certain places because of the wide shot. That's understandable. But the fact that it wasn't mixed properly to sound like where it was supposed to be coming from, and some of it was out of sync, and some of this felt like the Temu version of J.J. Abrams' Kelvin universe, you know.
Lens flares for everyone.
Yeah, this had a lot of that, and even some of the effect work, like some of the stuff they were doing. It was so blue screen, green screened in that it just felt almost amateurish. And it really kind of knocked me out of whatever suspended belief for the moment the movie had me in. That was my biggest gripe. I feel like that all could have been done a lot better. They wanted a Oscar caliber type film or an Emmy caliber type movie. They needed to bring their A game on all fronts. Obviously, the direction was not there. The creative was not there. And the special effects was not there. And again, when none of those are in order, like it's a kind of recipe for disaster for the actors that are in the movie.
You just jumping straight to your final review to give that sucker monocles right there with that follow up.
It's true though. The fact that like there were certain, we've already talked about the creative direction. We've already talked about the powers that be. And to top it off, like your special effects, and we already know effects teams and people who work in that industry already get treated like garbage. They don't get any kind of respect. And the fact that this movie is encapsulating someone who either tried to like, hey, I could do that in Final Cut Pro for $50. Like, I feel like that's kind of what they went towards. They're like, oh, well, we'll just do it on a budget. But they're trying to get Emmy, you know, nods and whatnot.
See, and that leads in great segue into some of my like yay thumbs up and my oh no. For yay thumbs up, definitely it was basically Star Trek by Balenciaga, like with Michelle Yeoh's outfit.
Balenciaga?
It's not a chi. It's an it Balenciaga?
Balenciaga.
No, he's censor to the Google machine. Okay, listen, her gown, like the designs of gowns, the outfits, the costuming was great. Michelle Yeoh literally was raining such amazing outfits. I was like, oh my gosh, this looks amazing. Her nails, her hair, and I know that they had, I think, Emmy Award winning or Academy Award winning hair and makeup. They made her presence so much. And then even with everybody else, they kind of like moved into spaces where there was some of that, but you could tell like she's the one that gets the money. And I loved the costuming in that regard. There was like, especially when there was fight choreography and she's literally got like half flippy drape things on her arms and she's still fighting and it like moves and it adds some more like dynamic movement to her. And I'm like, oh, this is really nice. I really like this. And then in juxtaposition, some of the sets that were practical, which like the first one we see, I'm like, oh, this is a cool set. Okay, here with this is a cool set. And then we're switching tracks. And then we get to the planet where it's supposed to be a desert. And you're like, guys, I can tell that somebody didn't put up enough rocks. Like I love, and part of me was like, because of the little bit of Star Trek that I've seen, I'm like, I love that there's like, it's minimalist and you can tell you're like, guys, this was where the money didn't go. And it was both like hilarious and heartbreaking at the same time, because they're like, this is a movie, wave my arms, this is a movie. And there's spots like when they're in the trash ship, or when they're in like the command tower, where it looks and it feels like it's alien-esque. Mm-hmm. And I love that. I love that there's a tactile feel when it comes to even the older Star Trek shows, that you're like, oh, this feels a little outer spacey. Like, there's something that's so tangible and tactile. And we've gone from this amazing, stunning set where everything's like glossy, and finding out that that's a ship. I'm like, okay, girl. And then we go to the planet and they're like, listen, we don't have any money for some rocks. Here's some sand. Everybody, don't lean. Okay, don't lean on this. It's a tube. Like, that kind of broke my heart a bit. And that simultaneously is kind of like scooting towards like issues that I have. We've already stated this should have been a show. It should have been a limited. It should have been a show. It should have been something else. Mm-hmm. Was it Casey Roll?
Mm-hmm.
The Chaos Goblin?
Yeah. First off, Chaos Goblin, great name. Her arc is one of the most infuriating arcs I've ever had in my life, like, and had to watch. Mm-hmm. She's like, hard-nosed, I'm Starfleet, blah, 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 which I'm like, great, perfect, keep going with that. And literally, we get a flip in the final act where she's like, I'm a Chaos Goblin. And we're like, oh, wait. When did that even happen? Because no joke, if you're watching this, she is like, hard nose, Chaos Goblin. And I'm like, there was no connecting moment. Mm-hmm. If she was even going to have like a scooch towards like Chaos Goblin, I would understand. She had nothing. There was no heartfelt moment between her and Michelle Yeoh. There was no acceptance of like, she's in Section 31. She can't get out. And Michelle points it out. She's like, listen, they throw the ones in Starfleet that they cannot handle to Section 31. You're here because they don't know how to handle you and you need to figure it out. And instead of having like that space, again, we talked about timing, the space to breathe for her to like come to that moment. And the way she's played it is she's so deep in everything that needs to be rules, that her flip is not only unrealistic, it basically makes her seem like she's crazy and not like fun Chaos Goblin crazy, like just legit crazy. And I hated it so much because of the way, Spencer, when you're like, listen, she's the captain of the Enterprise C, like we don't really know much about her, and she dies, but this is supposed to be like gearing up so we can see her and understanding why she's in charge of the Enterprise. And it made sense that like Starfleet, I'm in charge, blah, 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 blah. It just went to mania. Mm-hmm. And again, another one where I was like, wow, you guys literally just wrecked an entire character who had so much potential.
Yeah.
And I'm like, why would you do that? And now the more that we talk about it, I'm just like, literally they middle fingered the fandom. And you guys are flexible.
See, here's the thing about that character specifically. She did not need to be Rachel Garrett. She could have just been an original character for this movie. Mm-hmm. There was no reason to tie her into something from the future, because like it didn't show up here. And we also didn't really learn who this person is, because like that turn just kind of like, you're like, who are you? I don't understand what your like true motivation is, and like what even is your arc in this thing, which is kind of crazy because there's no like Rachel Garrett is X. No, you could just do whatever you want because we don't really have that much besides like a brief conversation with her, and then she's just gone. And it's like, you could have done anything you wanted with the character, and you could have just made her someone else.
See, and then the other thing too is, and we talked about pacing, we talked about building, even if she was less hard, like she was hard-nosed in like the first act, and then towards the second she starts softening, and then by the third she's Chaos Goblin, we would have understood. But again, it's cut in such a way, she's acted in such a way, that there's no way that you can actually like fall in love or get behind great moments. Mm-hmm. And then my last issue, I swear, because I'm passing it off to Spencer and I know you have more than me, is that final conversation that that, you know, Philippa has with manservant former I love you guy. I don't even remember his name.
Son.
See, that makes me feel bad. I didn't even remember his name. Like, there's this section of writing that actually has, like, should have more gravitas. It's well written. It's good. And the thing is, we don't care. And I'm like, are you guys kidding? There are people that actually worked to put something in there that had weight and mattered and, like, was a question, not only a question, but an answer to everything that Philippa is working towards. Like, and we don't care. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, this would essentially be taking Tenet's series, all of his run, and squishing it into a little thing, and then literally in that goodbye episode, and you know what I'm talking about.
Oh my gosh.
And then no one would care.
Yeah.
That's what I was like, I can't. Spencer, help.
Okay.
If there's anything left to say.
Yeah. There's stuff left to say. Yeah, this movie, while watching it, I normally don't think this about media I watch, but I felt like I was watching an active argument. Like, someone who really cared definitely did a lot of the writing on this. And then some studio exec was like, oh, no, you get rid of that. I don't care what you're thinking. Like, just put this person here and I don't care about it. Because, like, there's a lot of care done in, like, trying to make sure things line up. But then it seems like someone's forced to just do something weird and it doesn't make sense. For instance, we see a scene where Sand dies. Mm-hmm. And that should have taken place somewhere around, like, the 2250s, 60s, somewhere around there. We then pop forward roughly 70 years-ish to the 2320s, and he's still the same age.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Georgiou, that's fine. She's been time traveling. But, like, someone to just, like, be, like, a lot older but look exactly the same, like, that's really weird, man. I mean, you can point out that, like, historically, like, crossing from one universe to another is not to the exact same date, but, like, you could have had a throwaway line about, like, what was his deal, because he just kind of is really odd otherwise. Mm-hmm. But besides that, Philippa Georgiou, so the character, not talking about Michelle Yeoh, is a monster. Mm. And when we left off, she was kind of beginning to reckon with that. And it was actually very interesting and kind of like, you, like, even though she is a genocidal maniac, you were kind of rooting for her to maybe change. Hmm. Or at least, like, interested to see what she could become. Hmm. Because, like, what's too far for redemption? That was, like, that would have been an actual interesting question to ask. Ooh. And we didn't even talk about that whatsoever. And I'm really just kind of upset about that, really. Because Philippa Georgiou was probably one of the more interesting characters in the TV show Star Trek Discovery. And I really feel like they fumbled the ball hard with her character. Now, Michelle Yeoh, excellent to watch because she's as entertaining as always. But, like, I kind of feel like they could have done a lot more with, like, this movie.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, that's kind of where I'm at right now.
It's kind of the wrap-up of everywhere you're at.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of wrap up, before we wrap this up, let's go ahead and look at the roundtable question for the episode, which, oddly enough, is directed at Mr. Spencer Williams.
Ooh.
Spencer, we cannot pretend that we know the deep lore that is Star Trek, obviously. If someone was interested in jumping into this fandom, where do you start them and why do you think it'll keep them hooked?
Okay, there's many entry points. you can really start wherever you like. But if, like, let's say I was a child is asking, I'd be like, hey, Star Trek Prodigy is a really great show to start off with. You get, like, a bunch of kids find, like, a Starfleet vessel and just have a bunch of random adventures with it. Aww. And it actually turns into, like, you know, a quite, like, really well-written series for children. Like, got, like,
Classic characters like Captain Janeway shows up. A few of her cast members show up. Wesley Crusher comes back in that one.
What?
Actually has a fantastic arc. So I'm really glad for Will Wheaton that he finally got some redemption for Wesley. So that was really nice.
Oh.
If you're a bit older and you're like, I kind of want to know what Star Trek's all about, I point you to Strange New Worlds. It's a newer show that's still in production, but it handles being classic Star Trek kind of the best. It takes place with Captain Christopher Pike. You might remember him from the first Star Trek movie. Mm-hmm. This is like his prime universe timeline counterpart. So you kind of can see where this guy started off before Kirk takes over the Enterprise. It's been really fun. Get to see a few TOS characters. You have Spock in there. Uhura's in there. She's doing great. I would say if you're looking for something with a fresh take on Star Trek, I would say Star Trek Lower Decks currently. It's has a lot of deep cuts, but like you can still survive because the deep cuts are just jokes. And if you don't get a joke, that's fine. Mm-hmm. But like it does a good job of being like really funny and really kind of like poking fun at other Star Trek, but in a respectful way. Here's a brief example. For some reason, in Star Trek Discovery, they have exercise like shirts, and they just say disco.
What?
It was a
Where does it say disco? Is it just like
across the chest? It just says disco for Discovery. For some reason, I don't know why. It's very weird. So, like in the animated show, like they're working out, and they're in just like the ship's name is the Cerritos. It just says Ritos. And I'm like, that's a good like callback that doesn't matter if you don't get it, but like it's funny. Mm. So like Lower Decks does a good job, has Jack Quaid. Fantastic in that.
Mm. Yeah.
Very so, yeah.
Cool. All right. Well, you've heard the man. So moving over and wrapping this whole thing up, let's go over and go around the table and talk about whether the film passes or fails and how many monocles. Let's start with Amy.
Unfortunately, my friends, this one does not pass for me. And I say that with all of the knowledge and not knowledge that I have of Star Trek, but all of my budding and growing understanding of film, not only what it should be, where it can go, and where it can take you. Unfortunately, this one does not boldly go. It just goes and not in the direction that you're hoping for. Even with amazing actors who've given the time to actually move through their arcs, to breathe, to give space, to be supported by, let's be honest, the company, they could have made something really wonderful and delightful to keep people, not only to draw them in, but to grow and continue to grow that Star Trek deep-seated love, much as you've heard from Spencer this episode. So unfortunately, even with a star-studded cast, this guy is, and the only reason it's getting this is because you can see the people that actually loved, care about this, wanted to try to give something back to the fandom, and they just their wings were clipped.
Yeah.
I'm giving it a 2. Spencer, wait.
Well, actually,
Eddie?
No. Yeah.
Yeah, you're the showstopper, baby.
This is why we don't give the intern stuff. From my perspective, obviously the film does not pass. The film is very poorly constructed. Its arcs are never fully fleshed out. And the closure of this story is still very loose as to, I don't even know where that's going to go from here, even if there is another where from here. Mm-hmm. The inclusion of so many different elements in this movie that are supposed to be important, and then they're supposed to be taken away so that way you feel the impact of this importance or lack therein, is really running wild in the state of disbelief for this particular movie. And I can't get on board for it. So unfortunately it doesn't pass for me. And how many monocles did you do, Amy?
I gave it a 2 for everybody that actually loved it, but that's pretty generous. Let's be honest.
Yeah.
I'm really generous.
I'm probably going to have to go a little lower and give it a 1.5.
Yeah.
Honestly, half a monocle for Michelle Yeoh, half a monocle for Mr. Liao, and then half a monocle because there's probably not going to be another one. This movie really did itself a disservice by trying to compress an entire series worth of arcs, storylines, story elements, surprises, and everything else into a singular 90-minute runtime movie. not even giving it the glorious respect of anything over 2 hours. They gave it a 90-minute runtime. Yeah, that's a slap in the face to any Star Trek fan. That's a slap in the face to any fan who would want to, you know, see what this is about. If this ever were to be the sticking point as to why a franchise could have the potential to die off, this would be its best piece of evidence, because the fact that the people who are behind the wheel of the creative pertaining to and content pertaining to this particular franchise are just putting this out for the sake of notoriety and for recognition because they have an Oscar winning actress in a movie. It just feels like the people at the helm aren't really doing a good job steering the ship. So yeah, I'm going to give it a 1.5 and hope and pray that they listen to the people more than they listen to their wallets and their board of trustees and their stockholders. So with that said, Spencer, okay, bring us home.
So this movie does not pass. It just doesn't really want to deal with any of the legacy of like the character of Philippa Georgiou or Rachel Garrett or really anyone anywhere. They just kind of had a story they wanted to tell, but they didn't want to be bothered by, like, you know, history and stuff. And it's kind of weird and kind of sad. I feel that, like, Star Trek does a really good job of being open and accepting. You don't really need to have, like, a specific thing to onboard people. Mm-hmm. Just make good stories and people will find it. Mm. I really feel like that's the takeaway from this, because if I could get on board during the darkest part of the Next Generation when it was bad,
yeah,
and I stuck it through to when it was good, people are going to love some of the stories that they're telling now. Like, yeah, there's still good Star Trek out there. If this might not be for you, one of the ones I suggested, there's still a few other things that are coming out in the pipeworks that are also supposed to be newcomer friendly, like Star Trek Academy is going to be coming out later this year, I believe. That one seems kind of interesting. But for me, this gets a 1 out of 5, but I do want to shout out my appreciation for the entire cast and crew of this movie, because like, with Robert Kaczynski coming out and speaking out, he's really opened my eyes that like a lot of people who were there on the ground really did care.
Yeah.
And so I truly appreciate each and every one of them.
Yeah. Well, that wraps up another awesome episode of the Filmlosophers. Remember, you can check us out over at our website at filmlosopherspodcast.com. There we got allegedly over 300 episodes, everything from action, anime, comedy, suspense, thrills, and chills. If you're looking for it, we got it. Head on over to our website at filmlosopherspodcast.com. You can also check us out over on the socials at facebook.com/filmlosophers or at Twitter, Instagram, and Threads at Filmlosophy101 and at Blue Sky at the Filmlosophers Podcast. Over at our Instagram page, you can check out all of our extra content, such as Spencer's Big Score and Amy's Jane on Scene, and extra credit over where?
My extra credit doesn't live on the only place that I've ever lived, which is at Jane on Scene on Instagram and Instagram only. But the extra credit episodes on The Intern Files are available on our Instagram at Filmlosophy101.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, there you go.
There you go.
That was weird.
Speaking of our extra credit episodes, you can catch our latest episode as well as all of our streaming, all of our other episodes over at wherever podcasts are streaming, and that's Libsyn, iTunes, Libsyn, Player FM, Audio Boom, Spotify, Pandora, TuneIn, iHeart, Amazon Music, and everywhere else in between.
And Spotify.
That's right. I can't believe I missed that one. You can tune into your heart's desire on any one of those platforms. Look for us there at The Filmlosophers. Give us a follow or a subscribe and listen in. Tell us what you think. Did you watch the film? Did you see it? Are you a Star Trek fan? What are your thoughts? Give us your comments in the towel section down below. And if you like what you hear, give us a 5-star review because we've earned it.
We have.
Yes, please.
Again, this film is still available on Paramount Plus. So if you haven't had a chance to, head on over, check it out. And we'd love to hear your thoughts. So, you know, did you enjoy it? You know, did you not enjoy it? Either way, we'd love to hear your comments. So, again, thanks for listening to this episode, and we are so excited for next week as we got another great show in store. So, from all of us here at the Filmlosophers, I'm Eddie.
I'm Spence.
I'm still intern Amy, but I'm not a redshirt, I swear.
Class dismissed.
Stabby.
There was a what?
A stabby bit that was going to hurt my uvula.
Stabby.
Wow. Why are you putting chips down there?
Because it's at the top of my throat and the back of my mouth. Spencer's shaking. Oh, Spencer, I can't do your job.
So anyway.